With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Hello, kids. This is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and if I sound a little odd, it's because I'm not in my booth. I'm in my bed. I am bedridden. I have had what I think may be the worst week ever, and I can't tell that story now, but I can assure you I will soon. Up top, we had Wormburner with John Sonderricker, and you know what? We're going to go with that every time now. We're just going to open with that one every time. How's that sound? We've had a lot of wonderful little Risk ditties up at the top of the show. I'm sure we'll keep revisiting many of them many a time. But I started to get a hankering to hear the same thing at the top of the show. So we're going to give that a shot. This is Yacht behind me now. And our focus today is on family. Stories from recent live shows that hit on the subject of family. And it's such a family time of year that we're distinctly reminded just how fascinating or frightening members of our families can be. We're going to start with a young lady who, she took my sketch comedy class many a year ago. And she has risen so high since then. It's so inspiring to watch a person create a career. And Sarah is doing a beautiful job of it. She has the book Agora Fabulous coming out soon. And she has the podcast Sex and Other Human Activities. This is Sarah Benincasa. Here she is at the Risk Live Show in New York with a story we call The Grand Canyon.
If you ever happen to find yourself discussing pussy beside a corpse, you'll find the experience is less sexy than spooky, and you might also find it a little gross. We were at a funeral home. The pussy in question did not belong to my aunt, but the corpse did, inasmuch as she was still capable of owning anything in her post-alive state. She was dead. She was my great aunt, so my dead grandfather's now dead sister. One of several, one of nine, actually. The funeral home that we were at, by we, of course, I mean my huge extended Catholic family, big Italian / Sicilian, different things family, was at the Bon Jovi Funeral Home in Raritan, New Jersey, which is a real place, and yes, his family owns it. His real name is spelled, all one word, Bongiovi. He changed it, I guess de-ethnicized it, so that it would go over better with 80s mall hair chicks. But the Bon Jovi Funeral Home is a real place. It's right off Route 202 by the Somerville Circle, and it's a good time. The Bon Jovi Funeral Home is where everyone on my mother's side of the family goes for a wake or a funeral. On the inside, it looks a lot different than it does on the outside. The exterior looks like sort of a 1950s clapboard, looking pretty humble, two-story home. The interior is pink, different shades of pink. There's a carpet that's dark pink with some pale pink roses. The wallpaper is pale pink with fuchsia roses. There are gilt sconces on the wall upon which are mounted flickering faux candles. And then there is John Bon Jovi's cousin, Angie Bon Jovi, who is the funeral directress and has big titties and puts them on display along with the corpse. She has very long French manicured nails to indicate that she is sophisticated. And above her huge titties is always a cross to show that she is one with God. And so there's a lot of big hair. I'm not saying she looks like Snooki, but I'm saying she looks like Snooki. So that's who takes care of the dead in our family. And I was there at Bon Jovi Funeral Home for the funeral of my aunt, who was my great aunt, who was a very cool lady. And a lot of folks were there. And one of the folks who was there was my great uncle-in-law, Tom. I call him my great uncle-in-law because he was the roommate of my great uncle Tommy. In retrospect, I don't know if they were gay or just narcissistic because they were both named Thomas. Tommy and Tom met in the branch of the military that's reserved for faggotry, which is the Navy. And they were together for 35 years. And they worked together for 30 years at the same factory. And Tom was a really cool guy. My great uncle-in-law Tom was really awesome. And we never called him husband or partner, really, of my great uncle Tommy, because they weren't that type of gay. They weren't your modern type of gay, the young ones who they walk around and they got the clothes on and they look good and they think that they should have a right to say what they want to say. They're not the type of gay that marched in any kind of parade. They would have been the type of gay that very quietly and politely said, "Yes, officer, I'm sorry for disturbing the peace," and like left Stonewall very politely that evening while the queens threw things. They were quiet, they were religious, they were Catholic, and they loved each other very much, but they kept a fake bedroom, and I've never heard them utter the word gay, even. So it was just sort of like they were friends. And so it was Tom and Tommy who were friends, and like friends do, they they went to Hollywood to do the tours of the Starz house, and they went antiquing in Connecticut like you do with your bro. And they also worked together somewhere, and the place where they worked was a birth control factory. Some families are in the cobbling business, you know, they make shoes. Some are coopers, they make barrels. But my family's sort of medieval guild type trade was birth control. My dad ran the factory, and my great uncle Tommy and my great uncle Tom worked at the factory. And they made other things besides birth control. You had your oral contraceptives, you had your antifungal vaginal cream, and you had your diaphragms. And so my great uncle Tommy was in yeast infections, and my great uncle Tom was in diaphragms. Now, diaphragms aren't in fashion anymore. They are a barrier method of contraception used mainly by ladies who've had lots of babies and who believe that taking a pill to prevent the sperm from getting to the egg is an abortion. So they're enjoyed by crazy people and people who don't tolerate hormones well. A diaphragm looks kind of like this. It's different sizes, and it's a flexible, kind of like a NuvaRing wearing a cape. It's a flexible outer ring, and then you've got some rubber in between, and it fits there over the cervix, and everyone's happy. So Uncle Tom, my great Uncle Tom, said to me as we're just making chit-chat and small talk, he says, "So, Sarah, how's comedy going?" Because even though he is a homo, he's still a Guido. So I say comedy's going well and all this, and he goes, "Hey, I got jokes for you. I got jokes." And I'm like, "Please tell me the jokes. My great aunt is dead, not 5 feet away. I believe someone is going to try and climb into the box, which is a Sicilian tradition. I believe the black people also do this. I don't know what it is about that area of the world, but there's something about it that says, why not try to climb into the coffin? That'll make the person come alive again. I'm not saying that black people and Sicilians are necromancers. I'm just saying we're necromancers. So, Uncle Tom goes, "You know, we used to have jokes down at the factory. We used to call the diaphragms. We had names for them." And I said, "Continue, please." He said, "Well, the real little ones, you know, they were like the size of a quarter. So we called those the prom night." Oh! Yes, go on. "Oh, then we had the next size up, you know, which was like, that was like a little bigger. That was like, you know, for like, we called that the honeymooner. Get it? It's like the honeymooner because it's a little bit bigger." Yes, I get it. This is awesome. Never stop telling this story. What was the next size called? "Well, the next size was like the regular size." What was it called? "We called it like normal or like the regular, or regulars or normals, depending on the day." And, okay, well, all right, so that's three sizes. That's pretty crazy. No, there's four sizes. The biggest size was, like, huge, and we special made it, and we only gave it out, like, three times a year. We get a special order for this. I mean, it was huge. It was huge, and we called it the Grand Canyon." Oh! And he's Italian, so he's actually making these noises. This isn't just for effect. This is real. And there's a dead lady right there. Right there. And then he tells me more. He says, "The big ones are crazy, right? Like, so the big ones, we used to take them out. And we bring, like, the samples, you know, at the company picnics and stuff. Your father used to do this, too. It was funny. He won't tell you, but it was funny. Oh, we used to flip it around like a Frisbee. We'd flip it around like a Frisbee. And when we get a few beers in us, we'd flip it around like a Frisbee. And we worked with this one Jewish guy. He used to put it on his head, and he called it one of their, like, what are they called? Yarmulkes. It was like a yarmulke, like a freaking yarmulke. And he'd wear it on his head. Oh, it was crazy. We had some times. We had some times. She looks good." A priest appeared at that moment. He was an Irish priest, and he said, "I would like it if everyone could sit down, because we'd all like to take a moment to honor our dear departed sister, Immaculata," which was her name. And I sat down next to Uncle Tom, and I said, "Uncle Tom, what happened? The samples, did you end up selling those?" And he said, "No, of course not. That would be against FDA regulations. We would never do that." And I said, "Good." A few years later, Uncle Tom got really sick. He had liver cancer. And that's an interesting cancer to have because you turn colors. You turn yellow. It's a kind of like a Hep C sort of situation. And so you turn a sort of weird ochre color, if you will, a yellow ochre. I went to go see him because, of course, the whole family went to go see Tommy's roommate in the hospital. Tommy's roommate who had been to all of our birthday parties. Tommy's roommate who had been to all of our christenings. Tommy's roommate who had been to all of our Christmases. Tommy's roommate who used to decorate Tommy and Tom's house when they had their big Christmas party with the Dickens Village, with the little guys skating on the little mechanical ice rink and the big Christmas tree and the platters full of all kinds of cheese and the walls covered in framed photographs of dead people who they didn't know but just were pretty. They were into pretty Victorian ladies. Anyway, I went to go see him, and we brought lasagna and Tupperware because that's what you do. And he couldn't eat it, and so we sat down next to Tommy, and Tom was sitting there, and he was real sick, and we were chatting with him real quietly and leaning close so he could hear. And he had gotten sick really quickly. He'd been in the hospital for a few days, but it was looking pretty bad. And I looked at him, I said, "You know, Tom, like, I really hope you feel better." And he said, "Sir, I got one for you." I said, "One what?" He said, "The Grand Canyon. I got one. I found. I went home after the funeral." You remember the funeral? I'm like, "Yes, I do. I have been telling people about it for years." I went home. I found a sample I had. They gave me when I retired as a joke present, and I have it, and it's in my desk, and I want you to have it. That's for you. That's yours. Don't let nobody else take it." And I said, "Thank you, Tom." And that was the last time I saw him alive. Thank you very much.
Good night, Mama. Good night, Dan.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, Mama. Good night, Daddy.
Good night, children.
Good night, Dad.
Good night, Elizabeth.
Good night, Jimbo.
Good night, Mama.
Good night, Dan.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, Mama.
Good night, Daddy.
Good night, children.
Good night, Dad.
Good night, Elizabeth.
Good night.
This is Risk, a collage by Jeff Barr there, and this is Lee Rosevere behind me now. And for our last story of the show today, the great actress Lily Taylor returns to the show. A remarkable woman with a remarkable legacy of work behind her. We call this story, "It's Not Then, It's Now."
So my dad was a really bad manic depressive. He was a great guy. He loved people. He loved jokes. In many ways, he was the ton eccentric. But he also suffered from manic depression, which is a hell of a disease. either as people that go on the depressive side of it or on the mania side of it. My dad went on the mania side. The manic flights, they'd last weeks. They were high. He spent money. He bought cars. He bought houses. He bought grand pianos for people we didn't know. He had lots of projects. He had invented... he got a patent for a fifth leg to the walker. He was convinced that many people fell on the walker. It tipped over, and he was convinced he could prevent many hip accidents with this fifth leg, got a patent. So he was busy. So, you know, he'd been in and out of hospitals all my life. And the story that comes to mind, I was in high school, so now we're 15 years into this cycle of hospitalizations, and the family's getting worn out. I think my dad is too, but it's taking a toll. Because the manic flights, they're almost contagious. You almost start to feel crazy. So he was on a manic flight at this point, and, you know, everybody was just on eggshells, tenderhooks. You don't know what the hell is going to happen when you come in. The energy's so high, you're just kind of, you know, flying around with him. And so anyway, I was at school one day, and I had a fever. I left school early. I come home. My mom wasn't there. She was working, and the house didn't feel right. Well, my dad wasn't there, which was, he didn't work, so why isn't he here? The one car is gone. I just saw something out the window. I just saw a man run by without any pants on. I have a feeling Dad's outside. I go outside, and it's him. He's across the street. He has Fruit of the Loom underpants, Fruit of the Loom white t-shirt, and a tweed jacket. He's touching the front step to the neighbor's house. The thing with this kind of illness is you just don't know what mood they're in. Is he going to be angry? Is he going to be, what's he going to do? I don't know. I chose the tactic of calm and sort of understated. Dad, what are you doing? It's a very, very important race. I've got to touch the first three steps of everybody's house. It's very important. Please, would you just let me do this? So I don't know what he's talking about, race. He's gone. And he's so myopic about this, so focused. He doesn't seem to mind me. You know, I'm following him. We're at the second house now. He's at the step. I'm kind of just following. I think, okay, I've got to call my mom. I didn't really want to leave him out there, but my mom knows how to handle my dad. By this point, they'd probably been married 35, 40 years. There were six kids. He let my mom in. He wouldn't really let the kids in when it came down to, like, what was really happening, but he would let my mom in. So I call my mom. I just say, get over fast. He's gone. So we're now at the sixth house, and I'm watching, and finally, the car pulls up, the Cadillac that he had just bought. Ma pulls up in the Cadillac, and she said, hey, Park, I got some shrimp cocktail. Would you like to join me for some lunch? She chose the food calming route as the tactic. Shrimp cocktail was his favorite thing. He loved the lunches with my mom. He said, that sounds wonderful, but I'm in the middle of this race, though. I can't. I'd love to join you. I just gotta touch the first three steps of everybody's house. So just please, Marie, just let me. Okay. Well, why don't you touch the step to this house, and then why don't you join me? Because I gotta go back, and we'll have a little lunch. And so he did. He touched the step, and then he got into the car. I got into the back seat, and we drove the few yards to the driveway to our house. By that time, my dad's everything had changed. It's like he got the wind knocked out of him. He had sort of come to in a way, and he looked down. He saw he didn't have any pants on, and everything just started to go, you know. And he just said, "I don't, I'm not feeling so good. And Marie said, I know you're not Park. And we went into the house and I followed my dad. I think my mom picked up the phone. She's probably calling the hospital. And I kept an eye on my dad. He put his pants on and I was watching him in his bedroom. He combed his hair. He slapped a little bay rum on, you know, and tried to get a little dignity and came and sat on his black chair and just looked straight ahead. I sat on the couch. I just gave him some space. And then the paramedics, they knocked. My mom opened the door. Dad gets up. He's, you know, the paramedics were ready to, you know, put a little bit of wrestling, you know, and he said, no, I'm fine. I got this. Thank you. Thank you very much. So my mom and I, we watched him go out and, you know, it's like, you know, in one way we felt very relieved. He's going to a place that can help him. His problems were way too big for us. It's sad, of course. You know, he knew where he was going. I'm sure that didn't feel very good. We went and visited him that night and didn't know what we were going to expect because, you know, jacked up with Thorazine, doesn't know who we are, what's going to happen. He came out to the waiting room and just was like, sat down and seemed kind of present. No straitjacket, didn't seem too messed up with drugs, and sat down and, you know, just said, I think it was pretty rotten that you guys called the paramedics and had me come into this shithole. I think that's just pretty rotten. I said, okay, you know, that's all right. It's okay. You know, we feel like you were, you know, a danger to yourself and others, but it's okay. We understand. And, you know, he stayed angry for a while. He finally got out. The cycle repeated a few times. We finally did do an intervention, which is another story. But the cycle was finally broken. He did, he got, the alcoholism and the manic depression got addressed, and, you know, he died a sober man, which was really great. And so, you know, one of the effects that this had on me, growing up in that kind of heightened circumstance, was this fight or flight mechanism, you know, which was handy back then, you know, because I could kind of act fast, I could deal, and I could be vigilant, and, you know, boom. Not as useful now. It's not the same circumstances. It's too hypervigilant, it'll kill me early, basically. Being that amped up is gonna take some years off. So, you know, it's finding ways to take the breath, realize, you know, it's not then, it's now, and you know, I can respond a lot of different ways in situations, and I don't have to fight or flight it. Thanks.
Fascination. Let myself a gun that not only shoots but looks so real. Yeah, it shoots through the steel. There is a dark mirror.
That's all for now. This is the genius Andrew Bird with a new song called Dark Matter. Folks, today's the day. Take a risk.
The roof is loosed around our necks, made our DNA. Another day is going tighter, no matter what they do or say. And you can shoot right through with rays of dark matter just before they kick out. They kick out the light. True location.